Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Once again, I have Rick. Tony is still in Panama running wild with some clients, so it's just the two of us today, but really looking forward to jumping in here. We've got a pretty wild situation. The first news story, Rick, you sent this to me. Why don't you give a little bit of a background on Zach XBT's investigation into this case?
Yeah, this is absolutely crazy, right? Like, I think we mentioned Zach XBT in a previous podcast, actually, on some other investigation. But yeah, this guy's an incredible sleuth when it comes to sort of tracking illicit blockchain transactions and criminals on chain and stuff like that. And he solves quite a lot of cases. It's quite remarkable. But this one is an absolute doozy. It's a wild story. Like back in, I think, June, sort of this year, this guy came on X and tweeted that basically a few guys with machetes had just shown up to his house, pretending to deliver a package right to his house. And he opens the door. They're stood there with machetes. They come in. They force him to like open up his, I think he was using a Ledger hardware device, and forced him to send $4.3 million, I think, of ETH before they fled, right? It's crazy. I mean, thankfully, the guy never got hurt. He didn't get stabbed or anything like that. But can you imagine? Can you imagine three guys showing up at your door with machetes? I mean, you live in the US, Michael, so maybe less of a problem, right? Because you just grab the shotgun. But in the UK, if someone shows up with machetes at your door, you may be in a little bit of trouble. What's also crazy about this this story is that I don't know how he did it, but Zach XBT managed to get the chat logs on from Telegram between some of these criminals, like plotting out what they were going to do. And man, it's crazy to read the conversations the criminals are having before they show up at the guy's house. You know, they're just like chatting in this group, saying like, oh, are you sure that he's going to be home? How can you be convinced he'll open the door? And they're having this conversation saying, oh, well, most people will open the door. And then he's saying, what if he refuses to open up his ledger? The other guy says, oh, no, he's a geek. I know his ledger's there. Like, he will give it up and all this sort of stuff. So it didn't look particularly professional, right? I don't think these guys are like Jason Statham sort of hitman style operation that's happened here. And then, man, this story gets even more wild. So it turns out that someone else, another criminal, figured out who it was that did the attack, right? And created an ENS address called Faisal.eth or something, right? Which is the name of the criminal who perpetrated the attack, and left a message on chain that said, if you send 60% of the stolen funds to me, then we'll go our separate ways. Otherwise, within 24 hours, I'm going to start cooperating with the police. The whole thing is absolutely bonkers. And you know what? The lesson to learn from this really is that you cannot be running around sharing posts online talking about how much Bitcoin or how much crypto you have. I see it all the time on X, even accounts that I'm friendly with and follow. They buy Bitcoin and then they share a screenshot of exactly how much Bitcoin they bought on Twitter and stuff like this. And, you know, if you're running around flexing or being quite vocal about your Bitcoin holdings, that's a really bad idea. You attract all of the wrong sort of attention. So look, scary stuff, but a healthy reminder that we should all be a little bit more sensible about, well, maybe home security, maybe our personal information. I mean, what's quite amusing is the criminal kind of got busted by sharing his own personal information online, which led another criminal to try and extort him. So sharing information publicly is very, very risky, especially if you're into this sort of stuff. So I guess the advice stands, like, stay humble, stack sats, keep your mouth shut, don't be flashing your wealth everywhere. Because it's a jungle out there. And yeah, there's a lot of machetes in the UK at the moment. So, you know, maybe keep your wits about you.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was just explaining the $5 wrench attack to my wife. And she's like, so when are we getting that that trained German Shepherd to stand by at our house? I'm like, it's becoming there's a more and more compelling case each day, I think, to do that sort of thing. I mean, obviously very, very sad what happened here. Hopefully they track this guy down, they figure out, you know, who it was. Here's the other thing though, is, you know, you have to be more mindful too of the tools you're using, because now Telegram will cooperate with authorities and share IP addresses and some of that information. So don't be a criminal. And second, don't share about it. You know, don't share what you're doing or anything you wouldn't want leaked in any sort of online environment. It's just, it's not smart, not safe. And I think you hit on maybe the most important point, is don't talk about your damn wealth online. Don't, you know, that's a private matter. I think a lot of people are just, I think they haven't fully adopted the mindset that what they hold is money. Now, could make a compelling case here on a Bitcoin only podcast that, you know, ETH isn't money, but at the moment it's worth something in dollars. And so it's still risky business. Hey, just a quick break from Bitcoin Banter and we will be right back. Wanted to tell you to go over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast where you can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We can talk you through how we help you do proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. We help with online privacy. We can even help you set up a privacy phone. And we have a Plan B residency to citizenship option for you for all of your self-sovereign needs. You got to go check out the Bitcoin Way. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We hope to see you soon. All righty, we got another one. TD Bank pleads guilty in money laundering case, will pay $3 billion in penalties. That is about all I think I need to say to tee you up for a comment.
Oh man, I mean, look, you know, the financial system, it's just full of criminals, right? It's like that comedian George Carlin says, it's a big club and you are not in it. I dug through some of the details of this case and it's frankly shocking. It's absolutely shocking. So they were caught red-handed, basically helping Mexican drug cartels funnel money, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of this illicit money. In fact, in the investigation, apparently, by 2018, this bank had failed to track somewhere in the region of 90% of all its transactions to the value of like $1.8 trillion or something. So bear in mind that everything that we're hearing about this case is probably, in reality, a drop in the ocean compared to the money that's already been funneled through these criminal banks to help people launder money. And, you know, fine. You go and read the BBC or any new major news outlet and they would kind of suggest that they're getting their just desserts, right? Because this bank has been fined $3 billion. But compare that to the fact that their revenue last year was more than $50 billion. It looks a lot more like a slap on the wrist than any real sort of serious punishment. And again, dig into the details of this case. It's absolutely ridiculous. Apparently, there was an employee who raised on several occasions the fact that there were customers coming in and depositing $1 million in cash every day, right? How could you be any more suspicious than that? I mean, I cannot believe that I could stroll into a bank tomorrow with $1 million in cash and they just deposit that without asking any questions. This is happening repeatedly and, you know, employees are raising it and it's just being ignored. So look, the idea that, oh, you know, this is just a mistake, I don't really buy it. I think these people know exactly what's going on inside their banks, and I think they turn a blind eye because it's profitable and because the fines are not a significant punishment enough to create an incentive not to do it. And then you look at, you know, their CEO is a guy called Bharat Masrani, I think, and turns out he's going to now step down and swan off into retirement in April 25 next year, right? And no doubt a man in his position will be retiring with a big fat paycheck and lots of money in the bank and probably several homes dotted around the world. I'm sure he's done very, very nicely for himself. But he's just been running a bank that's been helping these Mexican drug cartels launder drug money. By the way, some of that drug money is linked to fentanyl, right, which is this huge epidemic in the US at the moment, destroying lives. I mean, look at the state of California. This guy gets busted helping them, And he's just going to sail off into the retirement, get on his private yacht, no doubt, sit there and sip cocktails and face no punishment. And at the same time, what did we talk about? What have we been talking about last week is Samurai, you know, the Samurai wallet developers who built Whirlpool to help you mix your Bitcoin with other people and give yourself some financial privacy. Well, the US government is currently trying to prosecute them for money laundering, right? And they could face really lengthy jail sentences. But the crazy thing about that story is that the Samurai devs never touched the money, right? They were never in control of any money that may or may not have been laundered through their software. All they did was write software. They weren't in control of what people were doing with it. And the Department of Justice are going to come down on those guys like a ton of bricks for trying to do this crazy thing of letting you be a private citizen. Meanwhile, a guy who's running a huge bank helps drug dealers launder money, you know, associated with the distribution of fentanyl, and no one cares. There's a slap on the wrist, there's a fine, there's no criminal prosecutions, nothing. So listen, you know, I don't know what we need to do to get it through to people that like this whole financial cartel is rigged against you. This isn't like a mistake. It happens all the time. HSBC, right? They got busted for laundering $350 million worth of Mexican drug cartel money previously as well, right? So it just keeps happening and happening. Meanwhile, they attack all the wrong people, and it's shocking. And well, look, you know, maybe you could tell us a bit about your views on Samurai as well, because I know you just recently did a podcast with a few guests about that case.
Yeah, so I had Econo Alchemist and Diverter No KYC on earlier in the week. So anyone listening, keep an eye out, subscribe to the channel because it's going to be a fascinating conversation that comes out in the next few weeks. And one of the things we talked about specific, well, we talked about the case obviously, but one of the things we talked about was the ineffectiveness of these anti-money laundering laws anyway, and their inability to actually stop money laundering. And this is I mean, just an absolute, you know, case study in that. But the interesting thing is that the Samurai guys weren't charged with money laundering. They were charged with conspiracy to commit money laundering. And one of the comments that I think Econo Alchemist made was it's an easier charge to get people on. And so maybe it could set a precedent. They could, you know, the prosecution could win something. But these guys were operating in the open. They were not shy on social media. No one was confused as to what their product did and what was offered. And people used it for all sorts of, you know, legitimate purposes, namely privacy with their Bitcoin holdings. And just like TD Bank, people use TD Bank for legitimate purposes to, you know, put money, to take money out. It's, you know, it's a really a pretty nice parallel. The difference, though, is these guys, it seems to me, were found guilt or pleaded guilty, probably to avoid, you know, a larger fine of money laundering. And if they were depositing $1 million in cash in the bank, like the libertarian in me says, okay, who cares? Leave me alone. Don't ask questions. It's my business. But we do have AML laws and regulations on the books. It's their obligation to say, what the hell is going on here? So yeah, the Samurai guys have done effectively nothing different than at least certain personnel within TD Bank. I mean, I think, you know, is the CEO specifically aware of that? I don't know, but he's at the helm. The buck's got to stop with him. And at the very least, the people who were involved in receiving that cash need to be heavily investigated, and criminal charges need to be brought the way they've been brought against the Samurai devs. So what's sad, I think, is that we're so accustomed to seeing these banks face large fines for nefarious activity, right? Like I remember when Jamie Dimon was talking about the only use case for Bitcoin is, you know, criminals. And people were sharing snippets of like newspaper articles like JP Morgan fined for this, JP Morgan. It was like a never-ending list. It's like, yeah, only Bitcoin is used by criminals. And here's yet another example of how the legacy financial system perpetuates those same problems that we're constantly accused of as Bitcoiners, you know, promoting and enabling. So it's It's wild that this is even, but again, because we're so accustomed to hearing those stories from banks, it's like just a blip on everyone's radar. Probably if you're a TD Bank customer or you're a shareholder or something, maybe you know you're thinking about it a little bit more, but the average person reads that headline, moves on, and then they hear about the Samurai developers and they're like, oh yeah, that shady crypto stuff or whatever. It's like, wake up, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know,
and the CEO, right, you're saying, and to a certain extent I agree with you, right? Like, he might have had no knowledge of what was going on in the bank, and so, you know, is it fair to hold him accountable? I'm sure, I don't know. But then look at Samurai, right? They didn't know who the users were. They didn't know where the funds were going. They never touched the funds. And yet they're being prosecuted. And the judge in that case has apparently said that, oh, no, but we can find you guilty of money laundering, even if you weren't aware that it was happening. Well, I think if we apply that rule to the CEO of the bank, we find the same situation, right? So why isn't he on the dock? And my point is, I think anti-money laundering rules are an absolute joke, right? Don't get me started. But what's quite clear here is that we apply the rules differently to different groups of people, depending on what we want. The financial cartel is just that. It is a criminal system, you know, and the governments are involved, politicians are involved, the bankers are involved. They've been stealing from us now for 50 years, right? Like, well, longer than that. And I think it's about time people could see, right, that you are getting ripped off every single way you turn, and the people who get away with the crime get away with it, and anyone who tries to test the system or find a new way that we might be able to transact with one another privately, they get attacked and they get thrown in jail. It's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, total double standard. Speaking of large financial institutions, we got Fidelity. It says that they had a data breach that exposed personal data of 77,000 customers. And, you know, but don't worry, they're custodying your Bitcoin if you're an ETF holder, and you don't have to worry about that, I'm sure. Rick, what are your reactions to this?
Oh, man, it's just never ending, Michael. It's never ending, right? Like, FTX collapse, BlockFi collapse, Mt. Gox, Quadriga. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And yet people still leave their Bitcoin with a third party in the exchange that they bought it at, which is insane. You know, the white paper, the Bitcoin white paper itself talks about the fact that this was designed to for you to use a financial system without the need to go through financial intermediaries. The reason being that we know we can't trust them. And everything we've spoken about so far on the pod today highlights the fact that these are a bunch of criminals that can't be trusted. And yet, what are people doing? They are going to Fidelity to not buy Bitcoin. They might think they're buying Bitcoin, but they're definitely not buying Bitcoin. What they're buying is a promise. They're buying a promise that Fidelity is holding some Bitcoin on their behalf. And the other thing is, they'll never take custody of that Bitcoin because, as I understand it, these ETFs are paid out in dollars, right? So if you ever exit the position, you're paid out in dollars. Now, I mean, where do you start with this data leak, right? So we've already seen that you can't trust the banks because they'll, you know, steal money, work with drug cartels, do whatever. They're unscrupulous criminals. And the other thing now that we learn from Fidelity is that these people, this is an organization with billions of dollars under management, right? And they are still not capable of safeguarding their customers' data. And I think that should show you everything that you need to know, that these, you know, if they can't keep your data safe, what necessarily says that they're going to keep your Bitcoin safe, right? It's the same. They're both cybersecurity problems. In both cases, you're trying to secure critical information. So who's to say that, you know, at some point, one of these custodians, whether it's Coinbase, whether it's Fidelity, you know, who's to say that they're not going to get hacked and lose all this Bitcoin, right? It's pretty wild. You know, I guess you'll still hold your paper promise and, you know, maybe Fidelity through, you know, liquidating other positions or assets will be able to pay you back or whatever. I don't really know. But what I do know is, buying Bitcoin at Fidelity or Coinbase or BlackRock or any of these places and holding a promise for it is just on a long enough timeline, something's going to go wrong. And
yeah.
The problem with Bitcoin is if someone steals money from your bank, they can just print more and paper over it like it never happened. If they get hacked and they lose all their Bitcoin, it is gone, right? It's not your keys, not your cheese. There's no way for them to paper over those cracks. And you're just going to be left to hang out to dry, right? They're not interested in you. So, yeah, you know, absolutely shocking from Fidelity. And also, this links to so much about what we've already talked about, right? Because look at the Zach XBT story with that investigation. How do you think the attackers found out where this guy lived who owned $4.3 million of Ethereum or whatever? Well, no doubt they've either, you know, stalked him on social media, or maybe this guy was involved in like a data leak from the Ledger hardware wallet manufacturer, or, you know, there was a data leak from a company called Krollwire, were the ones that were doing the insolvency case for FTX and BlockFi and Celsius. And even they got hacked, so all the creditors' information got leaked, right? And the point is that if these companies are going to lose information that contains your address, your name, your social security number, and who knows what else, maybe it shows that you own the Bitcoin ETF. Well, if I'm an attacker, I might say, okay, well, there's a relatively good chance then that this person might hold some self-custodied Bitcoin as well. And now I know your name and I know your address and I know you're interested in Bitcoin. So they are actually really, they're causing you real problems by this data being leaked. And who knows what other ways you might be targeted because of this, whether it's identity theft or whatever. Now, what I have seen from Fidelity since this news broke is they said, oh, you know, well, we will offer our customers sort of 24 months, I think it was, of identity restoration service. Whatever the hell that means. Like, these people didn't lose their identity. They're still the same person. What are they going to do? Like, give them a new name and a new birth certificate? Like, what is this? Like, witness protection with the CIA? I don't even understand what these crazy people are talking about, man.
It's usually credit monitoring. So, like, for a period of time, like, you know, we'll take a look and, you know, help you evaluate whether or not your identity is trying to, you know, someone's trying to misuse your identity. And the problem is that Fidelity is not the only person who's breached your data if your data was involved. And so, you know, it's been out for a long time. And I don't think a lot of people realize just how easy it is to go buy 1,000, you know, records of credit card information and personal information on the dark web. And it's happening all the time. So it's a Band-Aid on a massive wound, and it's only going to uptick. I think for me, the highlight here, though, is we've talked a lot about Coinbase as a giant honeypot. And so you're right. Like, there's the risk of the $5 wrench or the, you know, $20 machete attack, I suppose, for individuals whose identity are leaked in these sorts of instances. But you have to remember that, like, custodial Bitcoin is a pretty, custody of Bitcoin is a pretty new phenomenon because it's been around for 15 years. But these people have much greater complexity to deal with when they think about how do we secure this? Because I guarantee you, they're not buying Bitcoin, putting it in a new wallet and stamping a seed phrase and going in, you know, on metal and then going and securing it in a vault somewhere. Like, they've got some more sophisticated and therefore more fragile infrastructure for protecting this stuff. And to your point, it's just a cybersecurity problem. And companies have proven time and time again that they're not very good at cybersecurity. And when it's your generational wealth on the line, it's important to do it right. So, call the Bitcoin way, everyone. We'll help you with proper self-custody. You don't have to worry about Fidelity. And don't tell us or anyone else how much Bitcoin you have. It's just risky business. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
Well, maybe just that if you are committed to not telling anybody how much Bitcoin you have, then you might find that that rules out collaborative custody, where they're going to KYC you or want to know absolutely everything about you. So again, you know, some people will think collaborative custody is the way to avoid a single institution failing or a $5 wrench attack happening. but you are going to have to give up all your privacy to do that. So yeah, I mean, the takeaway lessons today are: be careful what you share online, protect your privacy, don't let that leak out, because there's loads of people that would love to steal your Bitcoin. And the financial system is not going to help you because it's full of drug dealers, money launderers, crooks, and criminals. And yeah, they make mistakes too and lose all your customer data. So it's time to take responsibility for yourself. Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, you have to learn some new skills. You have to take on a bit more responsibility, but it is the safest route. And hey, when you learn something, you feel good about yourself as well, and you become a more valuable, useful individual. So self-custody is the way to go.
Definitely. All righty, we got one more here just for fun. This is wild, man. What is going on? The former CEO of FTX is going to federal prison today to serve 7.5 years, drops this wild career update on LinkedIn. I'm happy to share that I'm starting a new position as, as inmate at FCI Cumberland. What is happening in this world, Rick?
Pal, honestly, you've got to be joking me, right? So the CEO of FTX is now going to jail for 7.5 years, but unsatisfied with, you know, destroying people's lives financially. Like, hey, look, I don't know this for certain, but would I be surprised to learn that some people may have taken their own lives because they got absolutely wiped out by the FTX thing? Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. You hear about that stuff all the time when people lose their Bitcoin and their crypto, right? So, you know, I know it's a laugh and everyone thinks it's funny, but this guy destroyed a load of people's lives. And all right, he's facing 7.5 years in jail. You know, I don't feel any sympathy for him. And the fact that this guy is so brazen as to like drop a little joke on LinkedIn just before he goes, I just think shows you the mentality of these people. And these are the people. They come from the traditional financial legacy system where you have to be a snake, you have to be a horrible piece of work to get ahead there. And they're drifting into the Bitcoin space, and they're offering you all sorts of nonsense for you to give them access to your Bitcoin. And they don't care. They don't care. Like, that guy might have caused people to lose their life. He doesn't care. What's more interesting to him is posting something on LinkedIn and getting a load of engagement for it. And he probably knows that he'll get out earlier than the 7.5 years. So yeah, I mean, look, let's call this guy what he is. He's a disgusting, disgusting human being, right? And screw him. So again, don't trust anybody. You can't trust these people. The only people you can trust is yourself and immediate family members and people that actually care about you, because these people, they show you every day that they don't care about you. So you need to stop caring about them, maybe.
Well said. And to your point about the trustless nature of Bitcoin, for anyone listening, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you secure your Bitcoin the right way in 100% full self-custody. We help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones, Plan B residency to citizenship option. As I mentioned, our team's actually down in Panama right now, many of them, helping onboard some new clients who are looking for that alternative to the crumbling West that they find themselves in today. So again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We appreciate y'all tuning in. Do me a favor, like this video, subscribe, leave us a comment, share it with someone if you find this stuff interesting. We'd really appreciate it, and look forward to catching up again with you, Rick, in just a few days.
Sounds good, man. Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, man.